Give yourself some love with our self-care programs at hrnradio.com.
Hello and welcome to High Energy Health. I'm your host, Dawson Church, and each week on the show, we explore the leading edge of health and wellness. I focus especially, as you know, on strategies and tools you can use and apply in your own life. So while we do talk about the neuroscience behind mental health and physical health, we talk about many of the latest concepts in science, I really have a passion for sharing with people how to apply these in your life to improve your levels of health and happiness. There are so many wonderful new therapies around, and they can make a drastic difference to your quality of life and improve your mood, and it doesn't have to take 6 months or a year. And we'll be exploring one of these in the show, and there are many that are worth exploring. So I really urge you to listen and then use these tools. You know, I have a passion in my whole research career for finding practical things that you can apply. And I have about 30 of them, which I list in my new book, which is called Mind to Matter, The Astonishing Science of How Your Brain Creates Material Reality. I just got a sales report from the publisher Hay House, and it sold about 30,000 copies in the first few weeks. So it's going gangbusters, and we're getting tons of wonderful comments on our Facebook page. We've had close to 400 five-star reviews on Amazon already. If you'd like to know more, go ahead and check out the book's website, which is mind2matter.info, mind2matter.info. And there you can get, if you click on the top menu bar, you can get things like our free meditation download, our free acupressure download. You can also get a list of where we're having trainings by authorized trainers over the course of the next year, and also our listings of certified practitioners, people who are trained to use these techniques with you. And there are 30 of them in the book that I recommend. So there are many ways, easy, behavioral, easy to learn, quick, and you will feel the results in your body. So go ahead and take a look at that website, mind2matter.info. Download the first couple of chapters. And again, do things that really help you. There are also so many other recordings in this series. And I'd recommend you go to the website, mindmatter.info, also look for past ones, and then download them to your smartphone, your wireless mobile device, because if you have something right there you know you can use when you do feel bad, if you are feeling down, if you do have a bad day, don't wait till you're in the middle of it to take action. Take action now. Have that arsenal of tools available, those meditation recordings, those pep talks, those informational talks that can pull you out of your state. Have those right there, and you'll find a whole selection of those on mindtomatter.info, the book's website. Also, if you go to insighttimer.com, it's the world's biggest meditation app. There are more people listening to meditation on Insight Timer than there are every single other meditation app, and for good reason. I checked into it a couple of days ago. I was showing a friend Insight Timer, and just that day, there were 383,000 people meditating on Insight Timer worldwide. Be one of them. You can go ahead and find our meditations there. It's well worth having those meditations at hand and then starting your day with that positive focus. Again, all of that is at mindtomatter.club, and you will really enjoy all the resources you find there. My guest today is Cindy Goodman Stolberg. She is a psychologist who's counseled individuals, couples, groups, and families for over 40 years. She is the co-author of a wonderful book called Feeling Better. The subtitle is Beating Depression and Improve Your Relationships with Interpersonal Psychotherapy. She, with her co-author Ronald Frey, is the co-director of the Institute for Interpersonal Psychotherapy, and you can visit her online at her website, interpersonalpsychotherapy.com. I'll say it again slowly, interpersonalpsychotherapy.com. And when I'm mentioning her book, I just want to make it clear that I'm not just saying this is a book worth checking out. I'm saying this is an excellent book, well worth reading, or passing along to anyone you know with depression. Cindy, I'm so glad to have you on the show.
Thank you very, very much for the opportunity to be with you today and share with yourself and your listeners. Well, and congratulations on your book.
yeah. It's wonderful when a book takes off, and I've had some that have had that happen and others that haven't. So it's fun to see one taking off. And, you know, as you can tell, Cindy, I have a passion. I share your passion for helping people through these mental health challenges because we both know that that there are so many good solutions available, and you have a lot of them in Feeling Better. Before we get deep into the book, let's just talk about your background, how you came to this, how you came to team up with Ron, and what led to the book.
I was thinking about that the other day in terms of I first learned IPT. I had been doing counseling for probably 20 years. And when I was working in a particular program, mostly with adolescents with eating disorders, we had the opportunity to learn interpersonal psychotherapy, or IPT, or CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. And when I heard that IPT was about relationships, I just was drawn to it. So over 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I learned IPT from one of the clinicians who had learned from the originators, where Myrna Wiseman and Gerald Klerman really in the 60s developed IPT. And I learned from her, and then I was supervised and continued. I got really excited again. It felt like it made so much sense to me, this model. And I began to learn and train, and I met Ron, my partner in crime, and my partner in training, and we've been working together for 20 years, because we approached our teacher and said, we want to set up an institute, we want to train other clinicians, we want people to know about IPT. She introduced the two of us, and I'd say the rest is history. We've been really enjoying our work, and we wrote the book because we wanted people to know about IPT, which in some ways is one of the best kept secrets in psychology, you know, so that's the quick version.
The thing is, even though you learned it so many years ago, Cindy, it's right in line with new brain science. I was talking about Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs at a psychology conference recently, and one of my colleagues, Dan Siegel, reminded me that, hey, we didn't survive when we were infants, and we didn't survive back along the evolutionary trajectory we came from unless we were able to connect with other people. Other people and other connections were essential to our very survival. They were how we survived early on in life and early on in our evolutionary history. So this is just totally in line with the newest discoveries and how our brains work. So please just share with us how important interpersonal relationships are in just basically a good life and in healing.
Well, I think we all kind of can feel that ourselves because and anything you read these days, you're right about the current issues. You know, they talk about loneliness and isolation being worse than smoking or worse than all kinds of other negative things. So we know ourselves that if we have good, meaningful, constructive relationships, we're going to feel better. And if we don't feel good, if we are depressed, then having good, meaningful, constructive relationships are going to make us feel better more quickly. And this is an evidence-based model. There's a tremendous number of research studies that have been done on IPT, and it's an evidence-based researched approach, and it's also highly recommended in treatment guidelines from the Psychiatry and Psychology Associations in the U.S. and in Canada and in Europe. So I think we can certainly look at research from way back when to current, but I think we all, we all know that we're not isolated from one another. We're affected significantly by one another. And I guess what we're trying to do is we're trying to say, rather than those relationships be stressful and difficult and problematic, let's learn strategies and techniques and have the ability to make them positive and as stress-free as possible. So, you know, I think certainly, as you say, you read everything these days that supports this notion, right?
Yes, and I love the way the book is full of strategies. And so, again, the book is Feeling Better, And Cindy and Ron, her colleague, have it's a 12-week program, and each week they're giving you really usable information that you can apply. So each week has a different theme, and then there are strategies you use. And they're really thought-provoking ones. Like one was to look at people who perhaps were harmful and really question the value of some of your relationships, as well as figuring out who might be really beneficial to be with and spending time
right.
with them and strengthening those
mm-hmm.
bonds. I love the way each week is a practical theme, provocative questions, checklists, and really helps you apply these techniques in your life. And so when people first come to you, again, the focus of the book, Feeling Better, is on depression. And when people first come to you, Cindy, what's the first thing, the first way you recommend that they apply this whole idea of interpersonal relationships for healing?
I think the first step is to educate themselves and others about what depression is. I mean, you don't have to be clinically depressed to use this model, but if you are, then you want to be able to understand what depression is. And we liken it to a physical illness or like if you have a broken leg, nobody expects you to go dancing, you know, this weekend. But if you haven't, right, you know, people will sign your cast and they'll ask you how you're feeling, and there's no embarrassment except if you did something really stupid, right? But basically, when it comes to mental health, there's so much stigma still. I mean, I think it's getting better, and we're very grateful to people who speak out and talk about it. But I think you need to know that it's not your fault. You don't have to blame yourself. I certainly don't see most people who are struggling with their mood wanting this. They don't want it for themselves. They don't want it for their families. And so by educating and understanding it as a temporary, treatable illness, that gives you the first step towards beginning to take care of yourself, to understand that you may need to limit some of your other activities, that you can't do everything you've always been doing, and to begin to spend some time and energy on taking the steps to feel better, to go through the process, the step-by-step process.
Yeah, the analogy you use in the first chapter is that broken leg analogy. You say, if you had a broken leg, would you still go and spend time with your friends? And the answer is, well, if I hobble along on crutches, probably I would, because it'll make me feel better. And then you give the example of the lady who says, well, but if I'm depressed, then I'll just stick to myself and
right.
I won't go reach out to other people.
Right. And I think it's crucial to do that, even though you may feel it's hard. You'd be very surprised that when you first open up to others, they often open up to you. You know, they'll say, I was struggling with that last year, or my husband really struggles, or my partner, or, you know, my kid. So I think really taking that first step and beginning to talk to other people is hugely important. You don't feel so alone. You also can begin to become closer and more connected to other people. And other people sometimes have some great ideas for you of how to handle it or what they did to help themselves feel better. So that's a huge important factor at the beginning, to talk to people, to tell somebody. We're not afraid to tell somebody, well, I fell down the stairs and I broke my leg, right? Or sometimes if we have pneumonia, it's not like we're embarrassed to tell our friends, you know, I don't feel so great right now, right? But when someone says, how are you? Sometimes we aren't as open about saying, you know, I've been feeling kind of crummy. I've been feeling down. My mood has been difficult lately. So it's very beneficial to do that.
What I also like is that in week 7, you actually have what you call conversation starters. And so
yes.
We don't know how to talk about our feelings often. We don't know how to talk about some of these difficult, ambiguous experiences we're having. And so I love the way you so compassionately but very practically guide people into what those conversation starters should look like.
Yeah, I really like that part of it too, because I don't like throwing people to the wolves, you know, and telling them, oh, just go do it, right? But, you know, if you ask someone, what do you think you could say? And if they have an idea of how to do it, terrific. But if they don't, we absolutely give people specific lines to say, like, even if you're trying to talk about grief, right, that's a tough one too. So, we tell people specifically, I'll give you an example, you know, my parents died quite young, I don't have experience dealing with older parents, you know, what's it like for you? So to say specifically, share something in a way that you don't, it's like, well, how do I say it? Where do I throw it into the conversation, right? So we do. We give people very, very specific words to use so that they can practice those things, you know, feel a little bit less anxious, and then, you know what to say to the person they're trying to share their feelings with.
In the book, you talk about the four different areas in life that can show up, can contribute to depression. What are those and how do we recognize them?
Yeah, and I think in IPT, the benefit, what's helpful about these focal areas is they're very kind of common areas that people experience that they might connect or trigger a depressive episode. So one of them is disputes. If you're having arguments and conflicts with people, and they don't have to be, you know, knockdown, drag out fights. You may have argued and now there's like no talking going on. Maybe you're avoiding someone. Maybe you're just not, there's this simmering tension, but you still have a dispute or conflict. The other one is unresolved bereavement. If it's been a long period of time since a loved one has died and you're still feeling as bad as if it happened yesterday and you're having difficulty functioning, that can be a huge problem. Or if you never let yourself feel the sadness or the feelings of loss. The third area is what we call transitions, and those are very common in our lives, whether it's a job loss, whether you're moving, whether you've had a baby, whether you're, whether you've got a promotion. People are going off to university and to school. Lots of different transitions in people's lives. And the last one is feelings of loneliness and isolation, where you have had difficulty, you know, making relationships, making friends or family relationships, and sustaining them over a period of time. So those areas help us focus. We ask our readers to choose one or two at the most of those areas and to choose a goal from those areas to work on during our 8 to 12 week process. And that really helps us hone in on solving something, achieving something, and feeling less overwhelmed. Because we're not tackling over, for some people, they have a number of different things they're dealing with, but it's very hard to deal with that, all of it at one time, right?
Yes. So you pick something that's achievable in that time frame and work on that. Now, one surprising thing you said a moment ago was in that list of transitions, you mentioned some ones that we would think of as being positive ones, like
yes,
grad school or travel. How could those spark depression?
Well, I think what's hard is because there's such huge changes, and anyone who has had a child or certainly seen other people have children, that's a perfect example, right? Because even if you wanted a child, I certainly recall I'm a psychologist, of course I'm going to be able to handle all this. I was a mess for a while, you know, after my daughter was born, because it's such a huge change in your life, right?
Mm.
So you have a child, and you know what it's like too with people who struggle with postpartum depression, right? After you've had a child, you're tired, you want to be good at what you're doing. You've taken on a new role. You don't know what to do. You want to be the best parent you can possibly be. The relationships with your friends and family change. So even though it may be a joyful time in your life, it certainly is a huge adjustment and huge. And people don't always have the specific strategies and coping mechanisms to handle those huge changes, right? Or going to university, the same thing. It may be an exciting time, but you know how nervous students can get, and how am I going to manage? How am I going to pay for everything? How am I going to do all the work? Even if it's a good thing, it can be overwhelming.
That is so interesting. We don't think about those things as being life challenges, but they really can be. The book is Feeling Better by Cindy Stahlberg and Ronald Frey, and you can see more about their work at their website, which is interpersonalpsychotherapy.com. My name is Dawson Church. You're listening to High Energy Health. We'll be right back after a break.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Hello and welcome back to High Energy Health. My name is Dawson Church, and each week on the show we explore the leading edge of health and healing with special emphasis on tools you can use to improve your own level of health and wellness. For more on my new book, Mind to Matter, go to the book's website, which is mindtomatter.info, mindtomatter.info, and there you can download free meditations, you can get the first couple of chapters of the book for free, and you can also see a schedule of the trainings done by our authorized trainers, and also see a listing of our certified practitioners. All of that and many other free resources are at mindtomatter.info. Also, I have received so many enthusiastic emails and Facebook posts about the book. Thank you so much for all of those wonderfully enthusiastic responses. One thing you can do for me is I have a goal, an audacious goal, a crazy goal, of getting over 1,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. Now, there are hardly any authors who hit those lofty heights other than Harry Potter books or new releases by Danielle Steele, but I'm aiming for 1,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. I'm already closing in on 400 of them just a few months after the book was released. So please do, if you have read the book, if you like the book, and you haven't been on Amazon yet, you don't have to write a long review for me, but please just go and leave me a review. Even just a few words of appreciation would be deeply appreciated by me. So again, all of that you can access at mindtomatter.info. That is the website for all of those free downloads as well as other episodes of this show. My guest today is Cindy Stelberg. Her book is called Feeling Better, and her website is interpersonalpsychotherapy.com, interpersonalpsychotherapy.com. That's where you can go to find out more about her work and also this wonderful book called Feeling Better. I also want to challenge you to give this book to anyone you know who is suffering from depression, because people are stuck in depression. I happened to be spending time with somebody this last week. In fact, Cindy, I'm just going to share this with you now because my wife and I have a person in our life who we see fairly often, and she's always really cheerful. We know her husband, we know her family, we really like her, and we always find her an inspiring person. And just this last week, Cindy, we were shocked when she told us that she's been on antidepressants for 20 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the research shows that prolonged use of antidepressants often leads to dependence and also long-term depression. And so it's really a shocker to us to realize, to find that this friend of ours, we had no idea, was on antidepressants, did that. And people often, she had no idea that psychotherapy could help her. She had no inkling that there was anything other than a medical possibility there. And I was like, oh, no, there's so much else you can do. So I'm glad that you're offering people these concrete solutions and such a really clear program for addressing this and sharing with them that this really can work well for them and give them an alternative to those drugs.
And it's sad for her, too, because even if you do take medication, and I'm not, we don't talk about with being for or against it, you're still, even if the vegetative signs, which are the sleeping issues or concentration or some of those signs, reduce, you still might have problems with arguments with your in-laws, or you may be yelling at the kids every day, or you may be struggling in a new city. So the medication isn't necessarily going to give you the practical tools and strategies to handle the situations that are contributing to your mood. So I think that that's why we're trying to share this information, wrote the book so that people will have the information and they can go to their doctor and say, where do I find a great interpersonal psychotherapist? Or certainly they can follow and read the book. So that's what we were hoping for. We felt it was such a valuable, practical model that we wanted people to have the opportunity to see if it was going to work for them.
Yeah, I love the way you don't make people wait a long time to get into the meat of the book. Right away, you're in week one, you have these practical tools you can use, and then each week you have more, and they build on each other. One of them that I really liked was in week three, you talk about naming your feelings, and often people don't know how to do that. And one of the other concepts I love from psychotherapy is there's a phenomenon called making the subject-object shift, where you actually name things, and naming them gives you a sense of distance from you and perspective on them. Go ahead and talk about that strategy and the six F words you have too for the emotions in week three.
Right. And I think it's funny when you read Guy Talk, which my partner puts in every chapter, right? He talks about some of the differences that women and men do in terms of talking about feelings, right? Without us being the way talking about people and how they do things, different sexes. But in feelings, a lot of people, really there are some basic feelings. And, you know, feelings of anger, feelings of surprise, feeling of sadness, feeling of, you know, being scared or disgusted. But what we try to help people do is, number one, be really aware. So we ask them and we direct them to identify how they're feeling. I mean, sometimes, and you'll hear this too, sometimes people will say, you know, I'm feeling crummy and I don't know why, right? And if I ask them to go through their morning or their day before, and I say, what did you do? You know, was it family? Was it friends? Was it work? Was it something like that? They figure out what was bugging them, right? They said, well, I had an argument with my boss, you know, yesterday afternoon. Well, do you think probably that's making you feel discouraged or angry or upset, right? So we help people, number one, identify what they're feeling by giving them, I don't know how many words, you must have like, 60 or 70 or 100 words in each of these categories that describe feelings, right? And oftentimes, I mean, you'll read in the book too, right? Everybody handles their feelings differently. So I've always been an emotional eater, right? So I know that if I'm upset, I either will eat. But there are a lot of better ways to handle those emotions, a lot of better ways to understand what's bothering me and who am I mad, who am I upset with, what's the situation, and what am I going to say and do that's going to be more constructive for me, right? So we examine, like with anger, people get angry quite easily, but they don't necessarily identify that they're also feeling sad, or they're feeling frustrated, or they're feeling inadequate. It's much harder to say that to someone, to say, you know, I'm feeling upset because I didn't get that job, and it makes me feel inadequate, like there are people who know more than I do. It's easier to say to your friend or your family, I'm angry. How come I didn't get the job, right?
Yes.
But to have a broader vocabulary and broader options for identifying what you're feeling, and then how am I going to express it in an assertive, constructive way?
Yeah, you know, have rather a long list in that same week of all kinds of feelings that are like subsets of those six primary ones. It's really powerful to start to get granular about your emotions. The book is Feeling Better by Cindy Stahlberg and Ronald Frey. And for more about their work, please go to their website, which is interpersonalpsychotherapy.com. We'll be right back after a break.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Hello, and welcome back to High Energy Health. I am your high energy host, Dawson Church, and each week on the show, we explore the leading edge of health and healing. For more on future shows, on past shows, for downloads of those shows, for all kinds of free resources, go to the website for my new book, which is Mind to Matter. The subtitle of my book is The Astonishing Science of How Your Brain Creates Material Reality. And for more on the book, for those downloads, the book's website is mindtomatter.info. At mindtomatter.info, you can see where we're doing workshops over the course of the next year. You can download many free resources like meditations and get all kinds of goodies like that free at mindtomatter.info. For more on Cindy's book, Feeling Better, as well as information about her work, go to her website, Feeling Better, the book. Four words, feelingbetterthebook.com. And again, this is an excellent resource for people who are suffering from depression or for people you love who might be suffering from depression, and giving you resources you can share with them that can really help them with their emotions and making a shift in a really brief time frame. Cindy, what I like too about that same chapter on naming that feeling is you talk about how there are three different personality styles and how each one processes these emotions differently. Go ahead and share those three styles with us and then how each one typically will process emotion.
We tend to see some people being pretty passive in their style, and that happens when you say yes and you really don't want to, if you're concerned about disappointing other people. And what we examine is that, you know, you don't have to worry about other people being annoyed with you or rejected in the short term, but in the long term, you really build up a certain amount of resentment and frustration, especially if others aren't going to be concerned about you. So that style doesn't always work. Another style is more aggressive, and some people really want to be right all the time. They want to be in control. And the gain in the short term is fine. You might win the battle or you might feel powerful, but you know, you don't really get much from others because they don't want to deal with you. That's, you know, people who are aggressive get avoided. So the long term is really, instead of just alienating people who you're getting angry at or mad at all the time, or not giving them a chance to express, is that you become isolated and people don't want to deal with you. But the most constructive style that people can use is to be assertive. And we try to talk about that. I use the word constructive a lot, too. If I say to my husband, if I'm mad at him, oh, you know, you're such a jerk when you do that, that's not going to get me very far. But if I say, it bothers me when you do this, I'm going to have at least more openness to discussion. If I also talk about what am I doing that might be contributing. So it's a give and take thing. I don't just assume the other person is doing something wrong. So that's more assertive, where I say, I'll listen to the other person's side and I want them to listen to me, right? So I think, you know, you may not know how the person's going to respond immediately, but in the long term, you're really building a much more mutually respectful relationship. And you're also finding out often what each other's expectations of the relationship are. So that style can really work much better for people when they're trying to build good relationships.
I also like to hear the stories of some of the people you've worked with who had depression and what the changes were they experienced. So let's make sure we introduce listeners to some of your clients and what their paths were. But one of the really useful strategies you recommend in the book that I really liked was that you recommended that we actually do some practice around these kinds of personal exchanges before we have them for real, and that we actually rehearse. You know, say, for example, you are being aggressive and you'd like to practice being assertive. You recommend people actually do some rehearsal of that before they're actually in the situation with that person.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because oftentimes people can, number one, be a little bit anxious. Well, I don't know what they're going to say. Who knows? How are they going to react? They might be mad at me. So what we try to help people do is, number one, practice. You know, practice with someone else who you feel more comfortable with. Practice saying what you hope you're going to say to the other person. It gives you a chance to feel less anxious when the time comes. And it also gives you a chance for to get some feedback. Let's say you can ask the other person you're talking to, and you can say, how did that sound? Was there anything I could have done differently, right? You can also explore when you're doing this practice, and we call it kind of role playing. And you can practice, well, what might the outcome be? What would be the worst thing that the person could say to you if you say, look, you know, I'm struggling, I'm having a hard time, I feel like we need to spend more time together, you're working too long. What's the worst thing they could say? You know, they might yell at you, they might get mad. What's the best thing they could say, right? So you get to practice hearing, oh, you know, I'm so sorry, I'm going to cut back on work tomorrow, right away, we'll have great times together. And then we ask people to say, what's the most realistic? The other person may just say to you, well, I understand, you know, what you're talking about, and let's see if we can work on it together. So by rehearsing, number one, you rehearse what you're going to say, which reduces anxiety and helps you, you know, formulate it in the best way possible. You get to rehearse and prepare for what the possible outcomes are. And you can plan on hopefully the most realistic thing happening instead of worrying about the worst or expecting, you know, the best, the most perfect outcome, which is not necessarily going to happen. So we advise people to practice. Hopefully they have someone. And if they don't have someone, so, you know, talk to your in the mirror, or that's what we call that chapter, mirror, mirror, right? So, or talk to your phone and practice it and listen to how you sound when you talk to other people, right? So I feel that people might like the idea of having a chance to practice first before they talk to the other person, right?
That's also preparing the brain and setting up some of the neurological conditions for success later on. You're listening to High Energy Health. I'm in conversation today with Cindy Stuhlberg. She is the co-author of the book, Feeling Better. And for more on her work, go to her website, feelingbetterthebook.com. Feelingbetterthebook.com. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back after a break.
Radio Your Way. HealthyLife.net.
Hi, and welcome back to High Energy Health. I'm your host, Dawson Church, and each week on this show, we explore the leading edge of health and healing. To download past shows or get free meditations or a copy of the first couple of chapters of my new book, go to the website mindtomatter.info, and the book's title is Mind to Matter, The Astonishing Science of How Your Brain Creates Material Reality. Also, if you're one of the many people who's emailed in and told us about how much the book's helped you, how you're meditating now, how you're so enjoying the more than 30 different practical tools in the book, please do leave me a review on Amazon.com. I now have close to 400 five-star reviews. My goal is 1,000. And you can help by going on there and just clicking on that review link and leaving just a few words of appreciation there. So please do go ahead and review the book on Amazon if you were moved by the book. So please go to that website, mindtomatter.info, for more. And to discover more about Cindy's work and her book, Feeling Better, go to her website, feelingbetterthebook.com, feelingbetterthebook.com, for more on her work and also about what she offers. All of that you'll find at feelingbetterthebook.com. Cindy, I also like the way you talked about expectations. And, of course, expectations are really critical in clean and healthy relationships. Go ahead and just talk about how you share with your clients managing expectations, their own expectations, and how to account for the possible expectations and outcomes with other people.
I think that expectations is one of the best aspects of the model as well, because rather than thinking about relationships as good or bad or black or white, I think if you feel that your expectations of each other and what you want in the relationship can be similar, then you're going to avoid a lot of conflict. And so for some couples, or I think, or for people, you can do it with your kids, you can do it with a partner, you can do it in terms of expectations at work. What's important is that the outcome of any kind of a finding out what your expectations are, first of all, is really to identify it. So if I say to, you know, my partner or someone else, you know, I expect to, you know, you to help with the dishes every night after dinner, and you know she says to me, well, you know, I make the dinner, so I think you should do that. I mean, that's a minor one, and it can be anything from something small to something big, whether it comes to how we handle finances or how we handle religious issues or how we handle the in-laws. So one of the really positive aspects, one of the tools we use, and I always give Ron credit for this, is that he developed this tool called the Matrix. And we basically help people identify their own expectations of themselves and expectations of the other person, and then for them to also try to figure out what the other person's expectations of them and of themselves are. So we guess, too. We may expect our partner thinks we think, well, we're supposed to bring in a certain amount of money to the family, or I may think my partner expects me to call his mother every day, right? But unless I sit down with the other person and identify what our expectations are and what they want, then I'm going to be putting pressure on myself, or we're going to be arguing over things that we don't have to argue about. So there's a very clear-cut kind of tool called the Matrix, which we explain in the book, that helps people resolve those different expectations, hopefully, and not have to fight about them, right?
I'm on that page right now, week 9, and just an example of a matrix is it's just four cells, four little boxes,
right.
And on the left-hand side is Cindy's expectations of Jay. Below that is Jay's expectations of Cindy. On the right-hand side is Cindy's expectations of Cindy and Jay's expectations of Jay. So you just fill out all four of those things, and then have your partner do it as well, and now you start to bridge that gap of expectations.
And you put it together, and you come up with one master matrix, and like one of Ron's clients do every year at New Year's, they go out and they check it out and then discuss it again. Look, sometimes it works, and people are willing to sit down and negotiate. Maybe the other person's willing to make a change. You may be willing to make a change. They both may be willing to make some changes. Or you're going to learn how to let it bother you less, what the other person does. And then, if there are circumstances where your expectations are so far apart, you may not continue the relationship. So those are the different outcomes when you begin to explore what your expectations are in your relationship.
Give us an example in the last couple of minutes we have here together of a client who did that, applied that, and made a positive change.
Well, I think one of the clients we worked with was concerned that they were going to have to be living in his in-law's home temporarily while they were getting, you know, making a change in their location. And by doing this, he and his wife were able to sit down and for her to realize how hard this was for him. That maybe it was easy for her to be in her family's home, but that he wanted her to be able to acknowledge and accept that he was having a difficult time, that he didn't want to feel that he was taking advantage, that he needed to know what he should be doing or not doing. So I think it helped the both of them. And then really for his wife also, she was able to say to him, if you need something or you're struggling with something, so stop being so wishy-washy, just tell me what you need, you know, instead of beating around the bush. So I think they both learned by sitting down and doing this exercise, what did each of them need from each other? And that's a really important thing you can do.
And it's then written, it's explicit, the other person isn't guessing. Even if you don't like some of the answers, at least you have information out there on the table, and you're in a position to then move toward that master matrix and hopefully accommodate everyone's needs and navigate a solution that works for everyone. Cindy, I've so enjoyed sharing this hour with you. I've also so enjoyed the book, and also I really recommend people use this because, again, you see our listeners see just how helpful this can be and how relationships can be so helpful in dealing with depression. I really admire you. I appreciate your work. I'm grateful for what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to share this with your listeners, and I hope people will take a look at the book, and we'd love to hear their opinions and their feedback. Be terrific, and they can look it up at feelingbetterthebook.com. So thank you very much, Dawson.
Thanks again for your work, and please stay tuned and come and join us every week for more in the series. We're doing a lot more of these shows, and we'd love to have you join us and give yourself the practical tools you need to have a better and healthier life. Please stay tuned with us again week by week. Till I talk to you next week, stay happy, stay healthy, and thank you.